Bob Jackman has an amazing sense of time, and he's always not only punctual, but he ties things in very nicely. So today, technically, officially, welcome spring, first day of spring. That means winter is in the rearview mirror. Well, what did it do to your homes? What did winter do? Now, I don't think we had a real harsh winter, but, you know, gutters, roof, doors, side of doors, you know, the side of your home, paint, the whole thing. And Bob joins us on the Valley Middleton building team. And, of course, they are LaValle Middleton building locations across our region. They're always looking for new team members as well. Bob, good morning.
Well, good morning to you, too. And it's funny because now that it's spring, they're forecasting snow, which we didn't get during the winter.
Yep. But, well, where do you start when you inspect the home? Are you looking at the roof? Are you looking at the foundation? Or you pretty much do a general, your own kind of informal or informal inspection?
Well, what I like to think is that the most important system in your house to protect yourself and all your possessions is the roof. If the roof leaks, you got a problem. So I like to start there. And now that's a daunting task for a lot of people. People say, well, I don't feel comfortable getting on a ladder to take a look at my roof. And I totally agree with that. Get yourself a set of binoculars, back up about 50 feet, and just do a roof inspection. And a lot of this is driven by, I was down visiting my daughter last weekend, and she lives in a condo-type building. She owns a condo. And the girl next door found a roof shingle on the ground. And she said, where'd this come from? And I said, I'm just going to guess, but I think the roof. So she was saying, well, what do I do about it? Well, in her situation, you just call the people that maintain the condo and say, hey, I got a roof shingle here. You better take a look. But in a home situation, if you find that, you've got to make sure you don't have a roof leak. So that's why I like to start with the roof, because a roof leak, you know, it's a very simple thing to fix in most cases. But the damage it causes is typically very expensive. So you really want to start with the roof. I always like to do a walk around, and my wife does the same thing. You just go around the house, take a look. Is there anything on the ground that shouldn't be? Is any of the trim coming off? Is any siding problems? You know, typically, anybody with exposed nails on siding, they might be backing out, and you're going to tap them back in. And that type of thing does happen to a roof, too. We want people to understand that the more they are proactive, the more protected they're going to be.
Yeah, and Bob, you know, the other thing too, and do you, if I go into one of your locations, can I talk to someone? Because, you know, I'm just familiar because obviously being a homeowner over the years, once or twice we've had to put on a new roof, an entire new roof. It's not cheap these days, as you know, depending on what part of the country or state you live in or region. So my question is, there are good, like any company, I think most people out there do a good job, but how do you consult or help the homeowner in that case? Do you have folks you recommend, or how do you help the homeowner that might have to, like you mentioned, your daughter or daughter-in-law, maybe in repair or do a whole new roof?
Well, we can easily do that, and we do it in two different ways. If you need names of people that we do business with that we are comfortable with, then we can do that. But the other thing is, we like to give you a quick education on what is a roof system. So when you get this price, which is probably going to scare you about getting a
right.
new roof,
yeah.
you need to understand what is actually being done.
Right.
So we'll go right through the steps. You know, roofing is a perfect example of what we talk about all the time. It's a system. It's not just shingles.
Right.
You know, there's layers and different things that go in there.
Yeah. And, of course, there's different types of roofs, different types of asphalt, you know, different type of shingles. You know, metal roofs are, you know, some people have solar on that roof. So is that a big part of what you see in the spring at your locations, people coming in, scratching their head, saying, what do you think?
Yeah, typically, unfortunately, what we see is that everybody, and myself included, when we bought the house we're in now, you know, we tried to stretch the roof one more year. We got away with it. But in a lot of cases, people aren't, and they've got those roof leaks. But when we want to talk to people, again, we're not trying to make you a roofing expert. We just want you to understand what that roof system includes. You know, it's a solid layer of roof sheathing, then there's drip edge, then a waterproof membrane, which if you're looking at a 30 or 40 year old house, those are probably just felt paper. Yeah. And that doesn't do as good a job as the waterproof membrane.
And
so,
and Bob, I agree with you
on from there.
I agree with you on the system, because I remember one year, you know, I know some folks have different views on gutters. You know, if you need them and you should have them, but obviously a good gutter system is good. And we, here we are looking at the roof, and then that roofing company says, well, you know what, you need new gutters as well. And you want to do that first, because we don't want to put the roof on, and then they got to kind of do the gut. So sometimes it is a system. Like you said, it's a system that protects and works. But what I'm also hearing, and you can comment on that, but Bob Jackman, LaValle Middleton Building Supply, is the consultative expertise nature, I think, is what you're trying to point out to help your customers in terms of their homes.
Exactly. And we want you to understand the system that you're working with. In this case, we're talking about a roof, but there are many systems in the house. And once you understand that, then you have a much better, let's say, knowledge base to make a purchase that is the educated consumer that we want you to be.
Now, and also, Bob, just a quick question from Michael and Bo, just a message I'm getting here. Do LaValle Middleton folks do roofs?
We do not have anyone on staff that performs the labor, so but we can certainly give you names of people. Again,
well, that's what I think he's asking. Do you make some recommendations of companies or vendors or partners that you might recommend? And I guess the answer is yes.
Yes, definitely.
Now, what about windows and all the other stuff when you do your inspection, with now that we have spring here, Bob?
It's always good if you understand the systems. Obviously, as you walk around, you can tell if there's a piece of trim that's fallen off the house or a piece of siding that's fallen off the house. And I can't tell you the number of vinyl-sided homes that in the spring you'll find one or two pieces of the siding that are hanging off. I mean, it's just a nature of the beast kind of thing.
Well, I know, and people have to remember, I mean, typically we're inside during a storm, but your house is never inside. It's exposed. I just chuckle when you say when you walk around and you find a piece of the house on the floor. I mean, we've had some airplanes lately that have been missing doors, as you know. That's not funny, but it's kind of a bummer when you're doing that inspection and you walk around the corner and go, oh, that's not supposed to be there on the ground.
Yeah, definitely. And in most cases, you can correct whatever problem that is quickly and easily. But if you put it off, if you're a procrastinator, you could be opening yourself up for a lot more involved repair and replacement.
All right. Well, great stuff as always. And if people want to learn more, go into a store, LaValle Middleton Building Supply, and over in Hampton over there, you have one easily located. You have them in your new location in Guilford. You're across our listening region. How many locations, Bob?
We have 13 full-service home centers. Two of them are in Vermont, and the other 11 are in New Hampshire, all the way from West Lebanon to Hampton to Dover, all over the place.
And let's maybe in the one of the next few appearances, Bob Jackman, let's do an update on your modular home division out in the western part of the state. I'm fascinated to learn more about that, because I know that's growing very, very strongly for people looking for second homes, primary homes. I'd love to get an update. And, of course, you always are looking for great team members, right?
Yes, and just talked with the people at Colby Sawyer College yesterday, and they are excited to learn that there are professional careers and vocations right in the area. And they were telling me that the job market is very hard right now. And I'm shaking my head saying we have very low unemployment.
Yeah.
You would think the job market would be big, but they're saying no.
Well, and the other thing, too, is we have one of the lowest per capita in the country. Bob, do you have any more contractor expos coming up?
No, we did all three last week.
Awesome.
What a huge success.
You must be exhausted.
Yeah, I'm exhausted, and my automobile is exhausted.
All right, Bob, we'll talk to you real soon. Good morning, Hampshire, the Pulse of an Age. Bob Jackman, LaValle, Middleton Building Supply, the location. Thank you, Bob. Manchester, VA, an important update for our veterans. I do want to mention that coming up, I believe, J-Dog, it is next Wednesday. Lori and her team there, they're going to have an open house, Kevin Forrest, a ribbon cutting for the radiology department. And that's going to be 8 to 9:30 next Wednesday morning. The Seacoast entrance basement level, Manchester VA Medical Center, just one of the great things happening. But right now, Kevin Forrest, and he has a great outreach coordinator guest, Michael, joining us. Kevin, the director of Manchester VA, good morning.
Good morning, Jack. Yeah, we're really psyched about the ribbon cutting here. You know, chance for us to show off the latest and greatest technology for our veterans. So always happy when we make improvements around here.
I know we want to get an update on the PACT Act, I believe, but before we do, Kevin, you know, I was just curious, when you look at regions that you serve, you have your main facility in the state's largest city, but you know, Tilton, Seacoast, do you see pockets of the state where you're seeing more demand for services and inquiries from veterans, or is it kind of scattered?
Well, you know, I can see a little lateral around the state, Jack. You know, my commitment to make sure we've got the right providers, especially in those spoke or remote locations, to be able to serve our veterans. For instance, we have Dr. Patrick, who recently moved into the Conway Clinic up there, and I'm so glad, because the Conway area veterans now have, you know, their own provider up there. She's embedded in the community, and it's just a win-win for everybody. So,
all right, take it away. What do you have for us this morning?
Well, Jack, you know, we're happy to present to veterans the latest and greatest on the PACT Act, you know, the Promise to Address Comprehensive Toxics Act, or PACT Act. But this has been going on since last year. But recently, at the beginning of March, with new implementation, we have more and more veterans eligible for health care than ever before. And with this latest update, this allows veterans, you know, from all areas, you know, from Vietnam era through current, to apply or enroll directly into VA healthcare without needing to apply for benefits. So that is a big, big deal. And, you know, I want to say that, you know, perhaps if a veteran wasn't even eligible before, we want to have them come back, and don't assume that you're not eligible now, and open the doors for as many veterans as we can. And you don't even have to, you know, it's not even deploying to a combat zone or overseas.
Right.
If you are subject to, you know, certain toxins, I mean, that happens right here in the United States,
right.
You may be eligible. So I've got Mike Bickrist, our outreach coordinator, is going to kind of take it away and give some more specifics, but just a great opportunity for veteran health care.
Yeah, thanks, Director. And,
take it away,
morning,
Michael.
Jack.
Thank you
for having me back.
No, always a pleasure.
As the director was saying, this is an awesome opportunity for veterans who aren't enrolled with us to come in and talk with us. You know, I definitely want to promote myself as the point of contact here in New Hampshire, and I'm sure you can get my email and my phone number out there. But, you know, if you're a veteran who served after August of 90 in Iraq, Kuwait, and the UAE, for example, or after 9/11 in Syria or Afghanistan or Jordan, we want to talk to you. But like the director was saying, you know, you could have been stateside on active duty, or active duty for training, or even inactive duty like the Guard or the Reserve. And if you've been exposed to, you know, pollutants or chemicals, occupational hazards, radiation, warfare agents. You know, there is information available at va.gov/exposures. But again, I want to promote myself as the point of contact here in New Hampshire for veterans to reach out to me.
Yeah, and I think Kevin and Michael, I was just mentioning earlier, Kevin, you know, I know you've had a good relationship with veterans counterpart of Easter Seals, but on May 15th, I'm doing my 10th annual 12-hour Make 12 Hours Count Radiothon for veterans count. But the reason why I mention that is I'm still amazed, Kevin, and I've been saying this on the show, veterans out there who haven't been to the Manchester VA, who haven't come in and learned about the PACT Act offering, the expanded radiology, your urgent care, the transportation opportunities and services. If they haven't been there in a while, they don't know, and sometimes they're not aware, and it's hard to reach out. And I know you have people that's their mission, right, Mike, is to reach out. But a lot of times veterans, they're just, whether they stick to themselves or they don't seek help because that's not their nature. And, of course, this is all about a hand up, not a handout, and they earned it. But I'm always amazed at the challenge is letting more veterans know about this stuff, right?
You know, Jack, I always look at the 30,000 veterans that we have enrolled and say they're our best ambassadors for, you know, reaching that veteran population. Perhaps if our media and other events don't, and just say, hey, I get my care at the Manchester VA and you should too, and it's a great place to receive care. I mean, I get my care here. I wouldn't want to go anywhere else. And right. Everybody, all the listeners here can help spread that word.
And one other thing, and both Kevin Forrest, or Mike can comment on this, but you're also coming up in April, I believe, on Tuesday. Laurie sent over April 9th. You're having a veteran town hall, and I believe it's going to be over in Portsmouth, right?
That is correct, Jack. We're going to be there in the evening from 5:30 to 6:30 at the Service Credit Union. And, again, it's another opportunity for us to get that information out to veterans. I know that was usually very well attended, so I look forward to just engaging with our veteran community.
And that's a close drive for you because I know you're over that area. You better know about it, Kevin. You're the featured speaker or one of them. Mike, we have a few minutes, so maybe we'll take a few minutes to let you end on just the best way for people to reach out, to contact you, to get in touch with you, whether it's a phone, an email, a website, a portal on the PACT Act. Just take a few moments on that.
Thanks, Jack. So email is always the best way to get me, and that's my first name, Michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L, period, Bichrest, B-I-C-H-R-E-S-T, at va.gov. Or you can call me on my government cell. And if I don't pick up because I'm helping another veteran, please just leave me a voicemail and I'll call you back.
Right.
But that number is 603-203-8391.
And, Mike, I may have asked this before. How long now have you been doing this and what drew you to want to do it? Do you enjoy the challenge and the reward?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I jump out of bed in the morning. I can't wait to come and talk to my fellow veterans and, you know, let them know about the care that's here at the VA. Like the director was saying, I get my care here as well, and I wouldn't go anywhere else. But if I could, Jack, I'd like to let you know and your listeners know that we do have some other events coming up. You had mentioned earlier about, different venues around the state. We are going to be having a North Country town hall on 19 April in Littleton, and we are going to be having another Vet Fest this year on the 6th of June here at the Medical Center itself.
And, real quick to Kevin and Mike, too, one thing, people who might want to volunteer and any openings, Kevin, to join the team there, just a final comment on that.
Well, we certainly have jobs available. People can go to USA Jobs and search under the Manchester VA or New Hampshire and see what's available. But I'm glad you mentioned the volunteer piece, Jack. You know, after the pandemic, volunteerism throughout the healthcare industry, I mean, it took a hit. It's tough we look at, especially when you mentioned transportation for veterans through the state, that's one area we're still challenged with, especially in those remote areas. So, if any listener out there wants to help a veteran, they've got some time to volunteer, to help get a veteran to their appointment and stuff. That's probably one of our biggest volunteer needs now. And reach out to us if that's of interest. But hey, a day a week or 4 hours, a week or something can make a big difference. And they can call the medical center 603-624-4366, extension 6422, goes right into the voluntary service department. But if they didn't get that, just contact any one of us and we'll make sure to link them up with the right connections.
All right, Kevin, I thank you both very, very much. I appreciate it. A great update, a multifaceted update. Our friends at the Manchester VA and beyond, thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, Jack.
Anna Brown, Citizens Count, good morning.
Good morning. Great to join you, Dax. So do you want to start national or do you want to start with that Golden Dome?
You know what? How do I say this? I may not be the fastest, but I'm not the slowest boat in the river, the ocean. I'm smart enough to defer to the great Anna Brown.
Well, I'll do my favorite then, which is always New Hampshire, because there's always so much going on that doesn't get as much discussion as it deserves. in our state house. So they are having public hearings still, many public hearings every day, and they're going to be meeting in the House and the Senate this week, and several big votes that are going to be happening. It's going to be a lot of debates to fit into just one day. So starting in the House, we have HB 1205, which prohibits anyone with the reproductive biology and genetics of a male at birth from participating on school sports teams designated for women. And so this bill covers K through 12 schools and the university and community college system, although the House is going to consider an amendment that would limit the bill to grades 5 through 12. And this is really the heart of a lot of those gender debates that we are seeing play out across the country. Nikki Haley, of course, made this part of her campaign. She called it the women's issue of our time, whereas the counter argument is that this is not a problem that's happening in New Hampshire. And so I think this bill is really going to come down to attendance on Thursday, because we have such a narrow split in the House of Representatives. There are several bills such as this one that I have seen come down to the wire of who is butts in the seats on that day. You know, we've had a bill last week that passed by just one vote. I'm expecting there to be similar issues this week in terms of what moves forward or not. But that's not the biggest debate they have today. You might think so, given all of the attention that those issues are getting in the news. But we also have HB 1283, which would establish a procedure for medical aid in dying. Opponents sometimes call this physician-assisted suicide. So the interesting thing on this one is it's come up several times in the House over the past decade, two decades, even back to the 90s. But there's always been this feeling that, you know, there's a lot of questions here about how this might impact vulnerable people, and we don't really know. Let's wait and see if other states are doing something. Well, this time it actually came out with a majority of the committee saying, yeah, let's move forward. So that seems like a notable difference this time around. And so I'm going to be watching that one closely as well. And then over on the Senate side, we have SB 522, which would establish an early childhood education grant program, kind of similar to the Education Freedom Account program that has got a lot of attention, a lot of debate this year, but it would be for pre-K. And so that's another one that I really feel is going to be an interesting debate to watch, because, of course, pre-K child care in New Hampshire is a really critical issue, that there's a real shortage there, and the cost can be prohibitive for a lot of parents. But at the same time, this Education Freedom Account model, which it's sort of similar to, gets a lot of heat because the idea is it's taking public funding away from public schools potentially. So those are just three bills, and they're going to be voting on dozens. So I can only imagine how they're going to be able to fit all these debates into Thursday.
Anna, can I touch upon something that I'm really trying to stay clear of the political? What you just characterized, these accounts, and I hear this often, it takes money away from public schools. But the other way of looking at it, it's getting money to people to decide where to send their kids to school. So what definition of that is correct?
Sure. Well, it's a little bit of how you're looking. But here's how it works. All right. So, and I'm going to talk about the Education Freedom Account program now, not this newly proposed early childhood education account grant program, because that's a little different, because we don't have public preschool or anything like that. So talking about the existing program, it allows parents or guardians through their students to take the per pupil share of state funding and spend it on private or homeschool expenses, whether that's textbooks or paying for online tutoring or school materials. Maybe it is a private school. So the idea is that funding is just following the student, okay? And that can be particularly helpful for students who struggle in that traditional learning environment, which was a huge issue during COVID, right? I think that was a moment when a lot of people really saw, you know, different learning environments are going to work different for different kids. And in general right now, we are in a crisis where a lot of students are behind the curve of where they would have been were it not for COVID-19 and virtual learning. It's a huge challenge. Huge challenge.
Yeah, I won't get into that.
Sure. No, it's a big issue. So the idea is that this could be great for certain students, but the concern is, I think, really, New Hampshire does have limited state funding for schools. It's mostly coming down to that local level, and so I think there's a real feeling that any dollars that are going somewhere else instead of public schools, you know, that is a potential problem. Because the public schools are still, even if they don't have to educate that one individual student, they're still going to have fixed costs in terms of keeping the lights on, paying for health insurance for teachers, and so on. I think, so it's, to your point, how it's phrased, it's, I think it's always going to be oversimplified because that's what people want. They want that soundbite. I think that it's a really complex program. It's a really new program, and I think it's going to take a lot, you know, years to come for us to really see, all right, what works well and what's really problematic. Right.
Anna Brown, Citizens Count, CitizensCount.org. Before I let you go on the national stuff, two topics, Anna, on the presidential front I talked about yesterday because I was fascinated, and I'm a tad contrarian, as you know. I like raising some commonsensical questions, but one of the ones that I'm noticing is we don't see any national news coverage at all regarding Robert F. Kennedy Jr., nothing at all. And the reason why I mention that is, you know, he could get on the ballot in some states, including New Hampshire, and have an impact on this election when you look at how many people are dissatisfied with the choice of Biden and Trump. And the other factor is no labels. I'm not seeing any candidate. I had Joe Lieberman on my show after that big event at St. Anselm College Institute of Politics a number of months ago. And he said, hey, we can go as late as Super Tuesday before we put someone out there. And I said, what are you waiting for, Senator? You got to get going. You got to let people know there's going to be a choice here. Well, we can go as late as Super Tuesday. Last time I checked, Super Tuesday's in the rearview mirror. So talk about no labels, no candidate yet. And Robert F. Kennedy Jr., as an independent, how many state ballots can he get on?
Absolutely. So we'll start with no labels. I continue to get emails from them on the daily that say, we're making that decision. We're narrowing it down. We're going to pull that trigger any day now. Every time I see an email from them in my inbox, I check it out and say, do we have names yet? Do we have names yet? So they say they're going to drop the names. I have yet to see the names, but they say it is coming. So I guess, you know, when you get 20 emails in a row from someone who says we are going to do it, I do tend to believe that they will do it. They have certainly committed a lot of funding to that effort. I feel that, you know, that's also motivation to follow through on it. In terms of RFK Jr., I will say I have seen some headlines speculating about his vice presidential choice, which has been mildly entertaining considering that they've been throwing out names such as Aaron Rodgers, who is, of course, known as a football quarterback primarily and not as a political figure. Wouldn't be the first time, you know, that an athlete has crossed over. I mean, let's look at Arnold Schwarzenegger, who, of course, also was an actor, or Jesse Ventura in the Midwest. So we have seen this happen. So I have seen a little bit of news coverage of him. But as you pointed out, it's really that ballot access question. Right. And how many states he could get on, I would have to really go state by state. But it's going to be a challenge in a lot of states because I know the whole point with no labels, why they started all of this talk so early was because the deadlines to qualify for the ballot in so many states were so stringent.
Well, the reason why I think it's germane or pertinent is I don't think it's a coincidence that Joe Biden visited New Hampshire a week or so ago and Jill Biden, the first lady, yesterday. They haven't been in New Hampshire in 2 years. New Hampshire didn't matter. I don't think they're here buying real estate. I think they're here because this election could be close, but what do I know? Anna Brown, Citizens Count. Thank you, Anna.
Thanks, Jack.
Good morning, New Hampshire, powered by Sig Sauer. Now back to Jack Heath on the Pulse of New Hampshire.
All right. Well, you know, we've talked a lot on the show about the lack of affordable housing or the so-called affordable housing crisis. Not only to buy, especially younger buyers trying to get into that first-time homeowners market with interest rates higher, but renters. And you're going to love this one. Now President Biden is going to focus on housing cost as a way to get votes. And those big, bad landlords that gouge for rent, you know, they're the problem. Aaron Rial, NBC News Radio national correspondent. Take it away, Aaron.
Yep, that is where his ire is turning. Biden was in Vegas yesterday attacking what he calls rent gouging, but this is part of his much broader election year effort to really shift blame on these stubbornly high costs of living away from him and his economic policies and onto corporations with outsized pricing power. Now, it is true that corporations, whether they be pharma or housing or really anything, major corporations and whatever they're selling to consumers, they have used this opportunity of high inflation to pad their pockets a little. You can see it with food prices. They exist. Mm-hmm. At the same time, there are plenty of landlords who own a couple buildings in town that they've owned for generations, and they've worked hard to maintain a high quality of living for their tenants. And these are not the people who are the bad guys. They're not getting rich from this. They're just, you know, keeping up a standard of living and paying their bills as well. But he's talking more about the BlackRocks who are coming in, these massive multi-billion dollar corporations, yeah, and sweeping up entire neighborhoods, right, and then charging outsized rents.
And we're seeing it in some markets like Vegas, Florida. I've read about this. Aaron Rial, ABC News Radio, national correspondent. Thank you, Aaron.
Thank you.
Michael Dennehy, one of the great ones, political analyst and all-stars. Dennehy Belay Group. Of course, he managed a couple winning presidential primary campaigns. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Jack. Good morning. Is it really unbelievable, though, you know, about this immigration?
What is unbelievable, Michael, is the hypocrisy.
It's nonstop.
Now, you know what, before we go to the gubernatorial, because you know what, it actually applies, because Kelly Ayotte this week, one of the Republican candidates, was calling on Joyce Craig, one of the Democrat candidates for governor, to basically, and you and I know nothing will happen, to undo her endorsement from Massachusetts Governor Healey over this latest case of someone, and you can debate if he was here, undocumented, illegal, whatever, this from Haiti, allegedly raping a 15-year-old girl in Rockland, Mass. And Governor Healey basically said, well, we have good system in place, basically. I feel bad, mm-hmm, for the family, but sometimes bad things happen. That was her explanation. But my point is the border and this, I mean, just look at pictures. This was a CNN story today, not Fox. Look at the pictures of the people, the Texas border. It's a crisis.
It is.
Of every proportion. And a lot of people who pay bills, work hard, they don't have time for the BS, they know it's a crisis. Mm-hmm. Is it going to be a cutting issue this next fall in the local and national elections or not?
I think it will be, Jack, and I think it will be because the administration, the Democrats, the governors like Mara Healey, are trying to pretend it's not real and that it doesn't exist and that there aren't problems and that people aren't getting raped and killed. But they are, and the American people know it. So I absolutely believe it will be an issue. I believe it'll be a big issue in the governor's race. Frankly, I believe it'll be a big issue in the governor's primary, both Republican and Democratic side. Kelly Ayotte's obviously coming out strong on this stuff, but she has some issues to deal with herself from past votes in the U.S. Senate. So, and Chuck Morris has tried to make an issue of that. So, it's going to be a big issue all around.
What are some of the past votes?
For amnesty, voting for amnesty, and I don't know. I mean, you'd have to ask.
But you know, it's interesting. No. I didn't mean to put you on the spot. I'm just saying it is going to be an issue. Well, let's talk about the governor's race. How is it unfolding? We know that Ayotte and Morris are the big Republican names. Craig and Warmington, the big Democrat names. How's it unfolding? What are the dynamics? It's not really yet on primetime stage, as you and I know. It's not front and center like it will be this summer and fall. What are the dynamics behind the curtain unfolding, Michael?
Yeah, really what it comes down to, Jack, I think on both sides right now is just raising as much money as they can. Kelly Ayotte's obviously the 800-pound gorilla. She's raising money hand over fist. Chuck Morris is doing a good job raising money, I understand, as well, but probably only about half as much as she's raised. And so the question is, can Chuck generate enough momentum among the grassroots and conservative Republicans to make up for a fundraising, not being able to reach her level of fundraising, which typically is, you know, Republican primaries. If you have the conservatives on your side, you don't need as much money. But it's still a question of whether he can do that. But make no mistake that this immigration issue will be front and center, probably the number one issue on the Republican side and potentially on the Democratic side as well. So it'll be interesting to see if Chuck can make that make the case on the Republican side.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Michael, because the Democrats going into this election, and I think a lot of them nationally, it's going to be abortion rights. So whoever the Republican nominee for governor is, and whoever the Democrat nominee, whether it's Craig or Warmington, you know that over and over and over again, My Republican opponent favors an abortion ban. My Republican opponent wants to ban abortion. Abortion. I mean, millions of dollars. And that's going to be the lead issue. They're not going to talk about inflation. They're not going to talk about the border, illegal immigration, undocumented, whatever you want to call it. Is that going to work with independent voters for the Democrats?
Only to an extent. And I think independents and conservative Democrats, I think they get the joke at this point. They know where everyone stands on abortion. The Democrats are going to make the issue of abortion number one. But they're going to want to hear about how to deal with the border, and how, because the overdose deaths are not disappearing. So that's also an issue, and it's because of the border. And then you've got these rapes, killings by illegals, and you have Democrats wanting to not call them illegal aliens. That's what they care about. They don't care about the fact that they're killing and raping Americans and college students. They care that they are being mistreated by calling them illegal aliens. That's what Republicans need to bring front and center to New Hampshire voters and Americans if we're going to really make a change here. Democrats don't seem to care truly about the border.
It's interesting, I had Michael Denny here. I had Donna Susie, Senator Susie from Manchester, on a few weeks ago, and then I want to ask you about the coincidence of the back-to-back Biden trips here. And I asked Senator Susie, she was calling in on behalf of the Biden-Harris campaign on my show, doing a preview of the president's visit to New Hampshire following the State of the Union address. And just on a separate note, talking about the state and national stuff this fall, I asked Senator Susie, I mean, she's a, let's face it, she's a former Senate president, formidable force in the Senate, leading Democrat. I like having her on the show. I said, what do you think the two top issues, Senator, are for independent voters mostly this fall? And she said the economy, and I think she may be right, budget, kitchen table issues, and abortion rights. And she's probably right on both, but she did not mention immigration or the border or illegal immigration or undocumented. I asked her if, in a sense, the Republicans making more of this than the problem, and I think that's the lead Democrat view, that Republicans are just trying to make it worse than it is.
Yeah, I think Senator Susie is probably one of the smartest Democrats in the state, but I think it's more hope than realistically what is on top of mind of people's. And all you have to do is look at polls, Jack. I mean, right? We've seen that the number one issue coming out of the New Hampshire presidential primary, South Carolina presidential, all the primaries has been immigration and the border and the problems that they cause, both the influx of drugs and the recent killings by illegal aliens, as much as the Democrats don't like to hear that. And that's going to be, I think that's really going to be on top of mind. And you know, the funny thing, to use a term that has been also front and center recently, I think we're going to see a bloodbath in the Democratic primary for governor, and one we haven't seen in a long time, this race between
Michael, you got to be careful saying that, Michael.
No, I figure I'm safe on your show, Jack.
Well, you know what's interesting? Are we going to see, and what, before I let you go, we have time, Michael, Denny Belay Group, Michael, I want to touch upon the Biden trips. Before I get to that, my next to last question is, you mentioned some of the issues between Morris and Ayotte. I think you touched upon them earlier. How are the Democrats going to differentiate themselves? Because I'm seeing, whether it's official or unofficial, Warmington has some key support, and Craig has some key support within the Democrat Party. It seems to me that Craig's got that John Lynch, Maggie Hassan camp, and indirectly or directly, it seems that Warmington has the Shaheen camp. So it's a major league battle there. What differentiates those two?
I think a big one may end up being who would be the strongest candidate for the Democrats. And I don't think it's any secret Republicans want Joyce Craig to win, because she was a disastrous mayor. And if Chuck Morris or Kelly Ayotte running against Joyce Craig, chances are good for the Republicans. Cindy Warmington's a bit more of an unknown. So clearly that's what Cindy Warmington's running on, is that she'd be a stronger candidate. I think it's a little too early to say for sure. But I think the other issue is the Republicans are in good shape regardless, because, frankly, they're just following the Chris Sununu model. Yeah. And Chris Sununu was a great governor. He managed everything well.
We don't have a big U.S. Senate race this fall, Michael, so we're going to see if this trend of Democrats and independents liking the federal delegation to stay Democrat, meaning the 1st and 2nd District with Pappas and Custer, but the State House remaining Republican. Before we let you go, Michael, is it just me, because I don't believe in coincidences as I get older, is it just me, or do I find it a tad comical? So after the State of the Union, the Biden-Harris reelection team targets some important states, Pennsylvania, some of the key states he's been going to, but he shows up in New Hampshire a few days after the State of the Union. New Hampshire. Hasn't been in New Hampshire in 2 years, blew off our primary. Thank you for writing me in. And then the First Lady yesterday, of the Bidens discovered New Hampshire, are they buying a home here?
Yeah, they are clearly trying to make up for lost time, Jack. It is comical. You're absolutely right.
But is it a sign that New Hampshire is going to be closer than people think, even Democrats? I would think that this is in the bag for Biden.
One would think so, but honestly, Jack, obviously I'm a Republican, but he is in such a difficult position because his numbers are so bad, and they're bad in every state. So, Trump's talking about targeting states that, like Minnesota, for Pete's sake. So he is vulnerable everywhere, and they can't take anything for granted. So it is smart for the Biden folks to try and shore up New Hampshire. He's vulnerable everywhere, including the Grant State.
Finally, Michael, does Robert F. Kennedy Jr. get on the ballot here in New Hampshire or not?
I think he does. I do think he does get on the ballot. And then what kind of impact he has is still tough to say. But I think he will.
All right, Denny, the great one of the great ones. Thank you, Michael.
Always a pleasure, Jack.
Rory O'Neill, NBC News Radio national correspondent. I was talking about this case in the last segment, Rory. You know what's remarkable, not to get into it? You can talk about the bond with Trump and what he has to come up with and how much time, because I want to hear the latest, because this could get really dicey. But no crime, no criminal charges. They go the civil route. It's not a publicly traded company. The allegations, inflated valuations on his private properties and businesses to get better terms. No mention at all that's up to the banks and those lending institutions to find their own due diligence, because if you and I want to sell your house, Rory, and you think it's worth $5 million, I tell you it's worth $800, you have every right to try and get $5 million. But anyway, $400 and almost $65 million bucks now is the bond.
Well, the bond is actually 120% of that, so it's going to be $510-ish for the bond.
Wow.
Making it that much harder.
So you wonder what's going to happen, right?
Well, you know, we'll see now. We've got some pending court action that could perhaps reduce that amount or kick this down the road a bit. The deadline is Monday the 25th, but there is a 5-judge panel that could decide to lower that figure. The Trump legal team has been asking to have it lowered down to $100 million. We're in record territories here, so it's unclear how the courts may act.
And where it goes, because the attorney general, I mean, you know, you could technically file a court to seize a building, a property, to secure. I mean, who knows where it's going to go, right?
Exactly. And, you know, it's also a question of what's in the best interest of New Yorkers. You know, seizing a building is pretty complicated, can take some time. And then do you really want the building? You just want the cash, right? Because you're trying to come up with this money. So, you know, does the state really want the building is another question. So maybe there's a lien that's placed on it. We'll see what other actions the AG may decide to take if Donald Trump and friends don't come up with some of the money soon.
Yeah, all right. Rory O'Neill, NBC News Radio national correspondent. Thank you, Rory.
Thanks, Jack.